the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is The Live Life, episode 16, RF Spectrum, with your hosts, Christian Samuelson and Mike Postipak.
And welcome to The Live Life. This is the show for the event staging live. We cover all that news and more for you here at AV Nation Production. Tonight, we're going to be talking about RF Spectrum. We all use wireless mics, the wireless comms, the wireless intercom stuff. But the FCC, over the last few years, they've been squeezing our frequencies. It's getting smaller and smaller, and what we can do becomes, well, an issue. There's a lot of ramifications to this, so to help us sort it out, we have a number of guests joining us tonight. Of course, we have our hosts, but first we're going to introduce Mike Weber. He is a representative of Shure Microphone. Also joining us is Alex Milan. I said that wrong again. I'm sorry, Alex. Say your name properly.
Alex Milan.
I don't know why I'm having trouble with it. For the folks to know, I practiced that before the show. But for me, I didn't get it right.
Sorry.
So Alex Milan. Three times. Alex Milan from RF Venue. They are a manufacturer of antennas, distribution devices, and assorted things for RF. He'll describe more later. Also joining, of course, is Michael Postipak. He is AV Nation and with Live Life. Good to see you, sir.
Hello, everyone. And Bill Marriott says hello as I broadcast from the beautiful Marriott today.
Yes, but the question is, are you a peasant?
I am quite the peasant, yes.
So he says. And, of course, hosting tonight is the one and only Christian Samuelson from Crosspoint LLC. Sir, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, George. Glad to be here tonight.
And as we work on this, it looks like our friend Mr. Mike Weber from Shure is trying to connect, but he may not be able to join us tonight. We will see. All right, well, let's get this kicked off. Christian, let's start it off. RF mics, they're the most important thing, or one of the most important things in our shows. It lets the talent get around without having to drag wires, but it's getting squeezed. Talk to me about it.
It is getting squeezed. I was working for a company several years ago, back in 2000, that our wireless microphones were going to be squeezed out of the frequency range by the FCC, and we're going to have to get new wireless microphones. And subsequently, the major manufacturers started these incentive programs, these trade-in programs, where you could send them your old transmitters and get a discount on a new system. At the time, it seemed kind of like a fast one by the manufacturers to me, but doing a little more research, I found out what the FCC was really trying to do, and that was create white space around the new digital TV spectrum and kind of squeeze us out of that portion of the spectrum. And now it seems that it's happened. Infocom's website that in 2015 the FCC once again plans to sell off a large section in the 600 megahertz range. And that's going to mean quite a bit for those of us who are manufacturers or rental houses or live production or venues. So I'm going to kick it over to Mike. Do I have all my facts straight here, Mike?
Actually, from what I hear that's not necessarily the case. Can you elaborate on that?
Who? Me?
Alex. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Let's first establish why the FCC and the federal government are reclaiming the frequencies that we have been accustomed to using for wireless microphones for the better part of 30 or 40 years. The federal government and Congress believe that fast internet access is as important as electricity and water. in terms of fundamental infrastructure that you need to compete in a global economy and to give all Americans equal access to the same information. So there's all sorts of strategies that the federal government has taken to open up internet access to all Americans, because you know we just assume that most people are on the internet, but there are many tens of millions who do not have access to the internet. And our networks are fast, but compared to other industrialized nations, they're relatively slow. So the President and Congress have made it a national priority to get our networks up to speed, both wired and wireless broadband networks. You can do that lots of different ways, but one of the easiest and most straightforward when it comes to mobile broadband is to open up additional spectrum, additional frequencies that can be used for mobile broadband. And so the white space thing you were talking about, Christian, kind of, but for the most part, we are losing our spectrum because that same spectrum is vastly more valuable to the American public and the telecommunications companies and Silicon Valley when it's used for cellular services instead of the now outdated over-the-air TV broadcasts and various other things like wireless microphones, in-ear monitors, camera controls, and so forth and so on. So that's the motivation for why our spectrum is slowly disappearing. Does anyone have anything to say on that? I just talked for about a minute.
Well, Alex, I think your points are certainly valid, but let's not forget they also want to monetize this. They've just concluded an auction selling off some other portions of much higher frequency spectrum for $46 billion with a B. And the spectrum that we're talking about is far more valuable. So they're going to try to pump some money into their coffers.
Absolutely. That auction you're referring to is called the AWS-3 auction. And there were about 50 to 60 megahertz that went for a record-shattering $45 billion or so. And not all of it, but a certain percentage, 20 or $25 billion of that is going to straight into the coffers of the U.S. Treasury, where it will be used for deficit reduction and other things that benefit the American public, from what I've been able to see.
And pork barrel spending, of course.
And what?
And pork barrel spending, of course.
Some of that, yes. But this is one of the rare circumstances where it seems the best interests of the people and the private sector, telecom companies in Silicon Valley, and the federal government all coincide magically. Let's do a little experiment here. Raise your hand if you own a cell phone. Your hand if you own a smartphone. Yeah, everyone in here owns a smartphone. Everyone, smartphones have changed our lives. Some would say for the better, others maybe not so much. That's an argument. But what you can argue is that the American public is voraciously hungry for fast, cheap, and abundant data. And that data comes in part from having the telecom companies own a lot of spectrum. I would
beg to differ only insofar as that it's not going to be cheap. What the telecom companies are terrified of is the fact that we're able to do a lot of this over Wi-Fi now that we used to need cellular service for. And if those lower frequencies were available for similar free services, they wouldn't be able to charge us as much as they do.
Yeah, what you're talking about is called Wi-Fi offloading, and you're absolutely right. Between 40 and 50% of mobile broadband traffic is now offloaded onto public Wi-Fi networks. If you get a Wi-Fi router from your cable company, there's one network for you, and then usually a sometimes secret network that's put in place for the public for Wi-Fi offloading. But the frequencies in question for the upcoming 600 megahertz incentive auctions are a little bit different than Wi-Fi frequencies, which are up at 2.4 gigahertz, and much more valuable for different reasons. Because they're in the UHF range, they have more ideal propagation characteristics. It takes less power, less transmission power, to send the same signal a greater distance. And so economically, it's easier for cell companies to roll out infrastructure with better margins because they need fewer base stations. And it's also ideal for areas that are traditionally difficult to blanket with cell coverage, like suburban America and rural America. And so that's why the 600 megahertz range is very important to all of the cell companies, and especially T-Mobile, who has very little low-band spectrum and mostly high-band spectrum.
Let's talk about some of the technical challenges as they present themselves to us as the entertainment industry. Carl Witt, Business Development Electrosonics, says that the 600 megahertz frequency range is ideal for audio for our purposes because it can be easily shaped, it can be easily filtered. As we go lower and lower in the frequency spectrum, our antennas are going to have to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's going to get much harder to shape the sound into something that's usable for us. Where is the threshold at which the frequencies for wireless mic transmitters and receivers will be pushed down to a point where technologically we can't really overcome some of the challenges inherent in a lower frequency band?
Right. Well, Mike, do you want to take that?
We could certainly start off with you're absolutely right. The 600 band, the 500 band is ideal for our purposes. The antennas are pretty short, and the propagation is terrific. We may see VHF band come back into more widespread use. It's, as you said, the antennas tend to get a little bit lengthy, but I certainly remember plenty of VHF wireless microphones back in the 90s. They worked pretty well. So we're probably going to see some of that. And the other thing manufacturers are doing is trying to make more efficient use of the spectrum that we have by creating better UHF tuners, more precise tuners, and also transmitters that don't have nearly as much intermod products, so we can squeeze them closer together. That's what Shure is trying to do with some of their newer products, is be able to just put a lot more carriers into a smaller amount of space.
I noticed one of the neat things that Shure is doing in the last 10 years or so is being able to press kind of an idiot button that scans the frequencies and tells you which is the most clear range.
Right.
And then locks the transmitter and the receiver into that group and channel.
And that's not unique to Shure, much as I'm here to talk about Shure, but there are some other brands that have that. But where Shure has kind of led the pack, I think, is being able to squeeze more channels into less space with some of their newer products. And the other approach that Shure has taken is trying to look again at some of the other frequency bands, 900 megahertz, 2.4 gigahertz. It is possible to operate wireless microphones and get good audio quality. Typically, the channel counts aren't very high in those two bands, and they're not suitable for professional productions that have high channel counts. But they are useful for musicians and small performance venues.
And let me add, in terms of audio fidelity, there's no technical reason, I've been told by reputable engineers, there's no technical reason why VHF can't sound as good as UHF does. The problem with VHF more has to do with the noise floor that's down there, which is a little bit higher, and the interference problems that arise from VHF propagation, as well as we mentioned before, the antenna size. It gets a lot larger, and the circuitry inside is probably a little bit more expensive to produce, in part because there haven't been professional-grade VHF wireless microphones produced in quite some time. I don't know exactly, but Christian, I think you said you had a 700 megahertz mic. Never mind. But when's the last time? I don't know. I have more book knowledge, I guess, than field knowledge. When's the last time you guys have seen a VHF mic out in the field?
It's been a while. The last time I remember them is in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah, Electrosonics. I had an old Electrosonics wireless mic that had a 3.5-foot antenna on it, and it used an RG8 connection. It was like a CB radio, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest problems that I remember with VHF was, especially in New York, was the taxi cabs, actually. We used to pick up taxi cabs all the time on those things, and it just was a real big hassle in that frequency.
Yeah.
Another issue with VHF, at least at that time, was they were fixed frequency, and as you went from one city to another, the frequency that worked in Boston might not work in New York or in Philadelphia because you had different TV stations there. So that was one of the big things that was addressed when UHF products started to appear on the market was frequency agility, being able to move to a new frequency and avoid those interference.
Right.
Well, let's talk about that effort. When I go to buy a Shure microphone, they ask for my zip code. Why is that?
Well, it's helpful to give you an idea of what bands are going to give you the most channels. So let me just back up a minute and explain that statement. UHF receivers, in general, don't tune across the entire available UHF spectrum. It's very expensive to be able to do that, and it opens up the front end of the receiver potentially to more interference. So most UHF receivers have a limited tuning range. The less expensive they are, typically, the narrower the tuning range. So at an entry-level point, you might be able to only tune across 18 megahertz or 24 megahertz. And if you happen to be in a particular city that has TV stations on that band, you're not going to have a lot of luck. So that's why we ask for the zip code, and it can help to determine the right product that's going to give you the best option of getting on air.
It's also technically whether or not end users actually abide by the regulations. I believe it's also technically illegal to use a wireless microphone within the contours of a nearby digital television station. That's
certainly true, although in general,
I'm not sure if anyone cares.
Well, we're broadcasting on a matter of milliwatts. Typically, these products transmit somewhere between 10 milliwatts and 50 milliwatts. A few of them are 100. And if you're a licensed broadcaster, you can use a 250 milliwatt transmitter. Television stations broadcast kilowatts of power. So, in general, unless you're indoors, or even if you are indoors in many cases, you're not going to be able to compete with a TV station. Whether it's illegal or not is irrelevant because it's just not going to work.
Well, the problem is interfering with the receivers in people's homes, not the transmitters. Because if the DTV transmitter, even if it's broadcasting at 20 kilowatts, if you're 15 miles away from that transmitter and trying to tune into Good Morning America or what have you, they've got an OTA these days. Your dBm levels may very well be similar or even less than what signal noise ratio you're getting with your microphone that's only 50 feet away from your receiver.
But in general, the user of the wireless microphone system is going to have to avoid that TV station just for their own, to work.
Yeah.
And that's part of what the scan function is that Christian mentioned earlier. It's going to scan, it's going to look for those carriers and avoid them so that you can actually get on air successfully.
So, Mike, what has Shure's reaction been to this announcement by the FCC, and what is Shure planning on doing moving forward for the consumer, those of us who have, will soon have contraband microphones?
Right. Well, Shure's taken a couple of tacks simultaneously. Shure has been lobbying the FCC for many years. They've got a guy there, Mark Bruner, spends most of his time in Washington, D.C., because these FCC commissioners don't really understand what we do. And so he's been trying to educate them, and in concert with other folks in the industry, Joe Ciardelli, Sennheiser, and various other people, trying to get the FCC to understand, we're not just talking about some musicians in a bar. We're talking about the NFL putting on a Super Bowl. You know, we're talking about Democratic or Republican national conventions and various other large events with hundreds of channels of wireless. So that's the first part of Shure's approach, has been to educate the FCC and try to maintain some bandwidth so that we will be able to use these products. Simultaneously, Shure's been exploring other frequency bands, as I mentioned, 900 megahertz, 2.4 gigahertz, also something called the DECT band, which is 1920 to 1930. We have a product now that operates in that band. We can get up to 40 channels of wireless. Typically, this is suitable for a conference room. It's not a performing system. But in the UHF band, we've also got more advanced wireless products with wider tuning ranges and more precise tuning. I just visited a place in Brooklyn, a major financial corporation. I won't mention any names, but we're going to be able to put 200 channels of wireless on one floor of their building.
Wow. Now explain to us a little bit about that 1900 megahertz. That's just below like typical Wi-Fi, right?
Wi-Fi is in the 2.4 gigahertz range.
Right, right.
So this is 1920 to 1930 megahertz. It's actually set aside throughout the U.S. It's called DECT, D-E-C-T 6.0. You might have seen a cordless phone at home that uses this band. And it's also used in some corporate environments. Plantronics and Jabra have headsets, the kind where you have a desk phone, push a little button, it lifts up the handset, and you're talking on a wireless headset. But there's room in this spectrum, if it's, and Shure's figured out a way to put, as I said, up to 40 channels of wireless microphones operating in that range if there's not too much interference. And it's pretty simple to set up as well. It doesn't work like traditional UHF where you pick a frequency for each audio carrier. It's frequency hopping, so you assign mics to audio outputs, and you don't have to worry about frequency coordination at all. The system does it for you. It's a pretty cool system, and we've had a lot of success. Again, without mentioning specific companies that have purchased this, we have a 40-channel system running right on Times Square across the street from Lion King and Good Morning America, and it's in a completely different band, so we don't have to worry about that.
Okay, now moving forward, if these things do pass by the FCC, will there be some sort of incentive program or trade-in for receivers, or, you know, those of us who have 20 or 30 systems that are left holding the bag, what do we do?
Well, that is most likely to be the case. The major manufacturers have done that in the past. I'm sure they will do that again. Right now, it's, you know, we're talking about the 600 megahertz band, but we don't know for sure how much of it is going to be taken. It could be a portion of it. There may be 12 megahertz or so that's left in the middle there to function as a guard band between upload and download cellular bands, and we may be able to use that. So right now, we're trying to give users as many options as possible that are flexible. Our GLXD is in 2.4 gigahertz. We have ULXD and QLXD that operate between 470 and 698, and they have very wide tuning ranges. So even if you have a product that operates, for instance, 632 to 698, that may still be usable. We just don't know at this point. The auction's been postponed to 2016. There's likely to be several years of period interim between that and when we actually have to evacuate that spectrum. So we're looking a few years down the road before you have to worry about it too much.
Yeah, and let me say that this process, which they call the incentive auctions, it's not going to be exactly the same as what happened at 700 megahertz. In part because there's so much uncertainty. First of all, do we all know what the incentive auctions are and how they work on a basic level? Is that something we should discuss?
Yeah, absolutely. Explain that to us.
Okay, so unlike in the 700 megahertz band, in the 600 megahertz band, the FCC very much and Congress very much wants to clear that spectrum so that cell companies can come in and start using it. But unlike with 700 megahertz, they don't have the legal authority to evict the over-the-air TV stations and incumbents that are already there. So they've devised this rather complicated and, from what I've heard, unprecedented legal and economic maneuver called the incentive auctions to unencumber that spectrum. The incentive auctions will work by essentially selling the frequencies that the FCC does not own before they own them through a process called the reverse auction. What's going to happen is the over-the-air TV stations who are willing to give up their licenses in exchange for enormous sums of money, between 10 million and sometimes hundreds of millions for more valuable markets like Los Angeles and New York and Chicago, they're going to pledge to get rid of their license in exchange for money, and then simultaneously there's a computer algorithm that will compute which licenses will become available in what markets, where geographically, and then the cell phone companies will be able to see that happening in real time, and they'll bid on those licenses depending on how much they think that they're worth. And then after that happens, assuming it's successful, and there's lots of variables that we don't exactly know what they'll be after the auctions are concluded. For example, we could lose as little as 42 megahertz of spectrum, or we could lose as much as 144 megahertz of spectrum, depending on how many broadcasters are willing to relinquish their licenses and what the cell companies are willing to pay. Assuming the auction is successful, assuming it happens, wireless mics won't be kicked out of the 600 megahertz band immediately. They'll have up to 39 months after the successful conclusion of the auction to get out of there. And that's tied to all the complicated repacking procedures, taking antennas down, retooling the TV transmitters, moving them to different frequencies, and so forth and so on. So Mike's right. Sounds scary, but we still have relatively a long way to go before that happens. 4 or 5 years maybe, but it's anyone's guess at this point.
Okay, so I'm speaking to you now on a microphone that's 732.65 megahertz, and
right.
FCC police have not kicked in my door.
No.
There are no FCC
police.
I'm on
the phone right now, okay? They're on their way, buddy.
Yeah. No, there is no enforcement division of the FCC. What would happen is if AT&T or Verizon got complaints from people that are paying for a service and it's not working, they're going to investigate. They have their vans with their sniffers, and they're going to find you eventually if you operate it consistently. More often than not, there are churches out there that have these systems. They use them for a couple hours on Sunday morning, and that's it. And, you know, blessed are the ignorant, I guess. As long as the AT&T doesn't send them a letter, I guess they're okay. Once they get that letter, though, they do have to respond because there are potential fines, and, you do want to operate legally.
Okay, the way that Alex just explained this whole process to us, it looks like it's going to be a long, long road to hoe, roiled in many legal and judicious battles, and we're going to be able to keep what we've got for quite a while before all this kind of pans out or washes out at the end. Is that correct?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that what Alex said, that, you know, 39-month period after the auction. And that's assuming that they're able to successfully get this auction to work. So far, from what I'm hearing, very few TV stations are actually interested in participating. And that could send the FCC back to the drawing board to figure out another way to do this.
So, Alex, this guy really isn't falling, is it?
Isn't what? I'm sorry, you broke up there for a sec.
This guy isn't really falling right now, is it?
Not right now. No. And I don't know what the usable lifespan of microphones in your inventory usually are. But 4 or 5 years, I don't know. Like, how frequently do you buy wireless microphones? for your customers? What's the turnover rate for upgrading to new technology? 4 or 5 years may very well be enough time to get ROI if you were to buy a 600 megahertz microphone right now.
That's probably true. You know, a lot of companies are just a little gun-shy now because they already had to turn over their inventory when the 700 band was auctioned off. But people that had products that worked in the 5 and 600 megahertz band prior to that, some of those products are still working just fine. I mean, these products can work for 10 or 20 years, barring legal issues and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But as you said, you know, how long do you need the product to work to make your money back? And with technology these days, the turnaround time seems to get quicker and quicker. I mean, how does anybody have a 4-year-old cell phone?
No, but I'm talking to you on a 10-year-old wireless mic.
Well, that's amazing in itself.
Well, I mean, you get your money back on a wireless mic pretty quick. I mean, you know, you're looking at an average rental of, you know, between 100 and 150 a day on a mic, you know, so what's that, you know, 15 rentals or something like that on that, so, you know, you can make your money back pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, a brand new ULX system is like $1,200.
That's right, and,
you know.
Guys, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, so let me ask a question that might be, you know, I don't know, a little silly. Let me ask you this. With them taking away the spectrum, you know, and if they keep taking it away, is there a possibility that they're that, like, for the industry, we, like, don't have enough of channels or something like that, you know? Can it be like, oh, my goodness, you know, we have no more channels to go to? Is that possible?
I have been told by more than one expert in these matters that we have to plan on the UHF spectrum that we use today either completely going away or being completely unusable in the mid to long-term future. Okay?
Wow.
Now, you're saying, well, how's that possible? Because we're only losing at most 144 megahertz, which would leave us 50 or so megahertz, which is a lot, and in addition to all the other ISM bands and so forth and so on. But there are other moving parts to this that may or may not materialize. The most worrisome for us is a new type of cognitive radio device called a TVBD or white space device. Have you guys heard about these things?
No.
Okay. So TVBDs are basically going to be radios used to distribute. They're probably going to be used for something called mesh networking, which we don't have to get into right now. But there'll be chips inside certain devices. There'll be small base stations for rural broadband. Possibly, maybe, I don't know. The jury's still out on this. But there could be chips in cell phones that are using the exact same frequencies we're using today to transmit data. And there may be a lot of them. And since they're going to cohabitate whatever remaining spectrum we have left, and since there are going to be a lot of them, it may be that even though we still have 50 megahertz, that spectrum is going to be completely unusable.
So you're going to have, like, people with cell phones at events are going to be interfering with all the wireless mics and stuff.
Let's clarify that a little bit. TVBD is a concept that's been around for quite a few years. It hasn't arrived nearly as quickly as anticipated. Shure was prepared for this. They talked about TVBDs, you know, 5 years ago at least, and in fact developed a wireless system specifically to be able to deal with that threat. Well, their top of the line, the Axient Wireless, actually has the ability to detect interference and move to another frequency. The transmitter and the receiver can, in a coordinated way, move to another frequency in less than 100 milliseconds and avoid that type of interference. It's a pretty expensive system for a musician, but we have broadcast facilities that have invested in it. It was used on the referees at the Super Bowl. And it's been used in some production sound companies, Broadway-type productions. So this is one technology that's going to come to bear. But the other thing to keep in mind is TVBDs are barred from operating where there's a television station, and they're barred from operating in the FCC's defined footprint of that television broadcast radius. So in effect, almost all of Manhattan is off limits to TVBDs, and that's going to be true in most other major cities. So to Alex's point, where it's going to find more use and where it's only being used so far is in rural or suburban settings where it can be used to basically create Wi-Fi hotspots without having to put a wire there. There's a campus, I believe it's in North Carolina, where they've put Wi-Fi hotspots in campus bus stops. And the Wi-Fi hotspots allow you to connect with your cell phone or your laptop. But the way the internet gets to that Wi-Fi hotspot without a wire is using the TVBD device. So we may not have TVBD devices ourselves, but they may be used to get Wi-Fi or other frequencies close to where we can use them.
Yep, those are some good points there. I think that we haven't yet seen the large and widespread rollout of TVBDs that we were promised many years ago because of all this uncertainty that we've been talking about. Companies like Google, companies like Microsoft, companies like Motorola and Qualcomm, who are interested in developing TVBD products, are kind of reining it back a little because there's so much uncertainty around the incentive auctions and just how much white space is going to be available. But I'm pretty sure, just because of how valuable the spectrum really is, that once the incentive auctions are concluded and we know exactly what is going to be available where, we're going to start to see mobile TVBDs coming into cities and coming into suburbs more than we have now, and they're going to be a problem possibly, especially if you are trying to obey the regulations and stay out of the contours of a TV station.
Okay. So now, tell me if I'm correct, it kind of comes down to that all this stuff that's going to happen, it's going to be a pain in the neck basically for the AV provider, but it's not going to affect too much. Really, well, besides being a pain in the neck and getting new microphones.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, Alex's point is correct. We could be losing a lot of bandwidth. But the other point is that there will be time to make those adjustments after the auction takes place. We'll have, as he said, up to 39 months or so to know what the landscape is. Companies like Shure and other companies will continue to come up with new solutions in other bands, and we'll figure out a way to give you products that work.
Yeah, and let me say one last thing. The people who need your customers who need one channel, two channel, three channels of wireless, no problem. There will always be spectrum there for them, and manufacturers will easily be able to adapt. The problem is for those users who need 50 channels, who need 100 channels, who need 200 channels, and also for the rental companies that have $50,000, $100,000 of inventory in 600 megahertz wireless microphones. That's going to be the problem. And I do agree with Mike that there have been many positive signs from the manufacturers in the new technologies that they're coming out with, and also through the FCC itself. They've recognized our unique needs and they know that we need spectrum, but I think there's going to be a pretty rough transition time here after the auctions where we're going to have to really rethink how we do wireless and why it's important to us.
Now, Alex, we know quite a bit about Shure and Shure wireless microphones. We haven't heard anything about RF Venue and what exactly y'all do to support the wireless microphone industry. And we're looking to wrap it up here pretty soon. But I didn't know much about RF Venue until I Googled and found out exactly what you did. You want to tell us a little bit about?
Yeah. RF Venue, we make essentially accessories, but accessories is not a very strong word. We make novel technologies that make wireless audio systems work and sound better. So we don't make any wireless mics ourselves, but we have tools that mostly operate on the physical layer, the layer of electrons, antennas, and distribution equipment that make existing wireless systems much more reliable. Antennas are our bread and butter, but we have some other things. We have a spectrum analyzer. We have some distribution equipment, some fiber optic converters, and so forth. But we are about maximizing the available spectrum that you have available to you in your facility and in whatever location you're putting mics in, so you can get the most out of it.
Yeah, I've got my eye on that diversity fin antenna that you make right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of our better selling products. It's basically takes the place of the two LPDA paddle antennas that you see all over the place. There's two antennas in one, and it eliminates one of the most common causes of dropouts, which is called multipath interference. You know, when the waves are bouncing around in different rooms, and as they're arriving at the receiver at different times, you get a phase cancellation and a dropout. The diversity fin pretty much eliminates multipath interference.
Well, that's taken us into a whole another subject we could spend an entire show on. But
yes. Or three.
Yeah, two or three shows. I'd like to take this time to thank our guests today, both Alex and Mike, for taking the time with us tonight for the education. You know, I certainly know a lot more about this RF situation that we're going to be faced with here in the future, and I'm sure that some of you are as well, but we're still left with a few questions ever in just one show.
Right.
So, Mike, would you like to say a few words before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I don't know. I just really want to go ahead and thank our guests here. I'll tell you, they're rocket scientists. What can I say? You know, I really learned a lot from what you said today, and I really appreciate you coming on. And I know this will be very helpful to everybody out there. So thanks.
Well, thanks for having us.
I hope so. Yes, a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you very much. You have been participating and watching and possibly listening to The Live Life. The show has been on the RF frequencies that the FCC is going to be relegating out. Looks like it's going to take a long time to do so. This has been a production of AV Nation. We're glad that you're all here. Tuning in for more exciting shows coming down the pipe.
Okay, thank you.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This
is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.